Welcome, everybody. This is the Back to the 80s Radio Show, where nostalgia is the only reason why we do what we're doing and the reason why we keep on coming back for more. Thanks for being with us as we continue to talk about the 1980s and the 1980s icons. Those people, the music, movies, performers, fads, and fashion that swept over the entire globe. But before we continue, I want to introduce a man that dresses like Rambo every other day and talks like the Terminator and argues with himself. He's been seen many times in the 1980s going to Wendy's only to ask where's the beef lady is. Here at Back to the 80s, we call him the Wondrous Chang.
Tusky, how the hell are you doing? Welcome to Back to the 80s. Yes, it is Chang. And I'm in a location on the verge of finding more proof of offspring from Sasquatch. Enough of that.
I also want to remind you guys to stick around because during this show, we have a very special guest. It is Sandy Kaye from the show A Breath of Fresh Air. And she's going to be interviewing a very special someone from Berlin. And more of the 1980s when we return as we talk about the legendary icons, whether it be in music, movies, fashion, fads, or more. Stick around, because Chang is coming to get you.
Friday, party, time, weekend, beginning now, if you're ready to do it, quitting time. If you're ready, let's get
welcome back to Back to the 80s Radio, hosted by yours truly, Toscano and Chang. How has your week been going? Even if it sucked or it was great, it is over, and you are in the hands of the dynamic duo. Now, first of all, we have to give out our beautiful and our heartfelt shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to the UK, Ukraine, Italia, Mexico, Hawaii, Louisiana, all the states for continuing to listen to us. Also, a very special shout out to all the everyday heroes, Toscano. That's right. Teachers, paramedics, doctors, nurses, counselors, police officers. Yes, police officers and firemen. I want to give a special shout out to the Smoke Eater. That's right, everybody. Mr. Howard Carr. Thank you for the love, brother. We appreciate what you do for a living. You, sir, are a true freaking hero. We totally love that you dig the vibe. We do it for cats and kitties like you. Play us in the firehouse. Thank you for all that. Special shout out.
A big shout out to everybody in New York. Whether you guys are working or at home, in the car, or working out, or doing some other stuff, and you're listening to Toscano and Chang here on Back to the 80s Radio, we appreciate you wherever you are. Hey, a very special note that if you do have a topic or if you want to hear a song here and you want to let us know, go ahead and write to us here at back2the80sradio@gmail.com. That's back2the80sradio@gmail.com. We also want to let you know that every other Friday, we have a very special segment. We have a new segment for the show. It's called The 80s Greatest Album. So we invite you to stick around and send us your request if you have a special album that you want us to play in its entirety, because that's exactly what we do. We take on your request and we play them in their entirety. So, Chang, today we are continuing our talk in the icons from the 1980s. But we realize, look, not every icon of the 80s was just a music performer. But today, we want to return and touch on the subject.
No.
And we want to
skip. It's too big of a list.
We have the return of the legends. Now, in 2023, we have a few of the legends of back then, those guys and gals that were literally icons of the era, performing new tours today. Chang, off the top of my head, I remember in 2019, there is a critically acclaimed album from Madonna that released her Madame X album and her Madame X tour, her world tour, very successful, if I might add as well. Madonna added her World Tour in 2019. Duran Duran released their Future Past in 2021, where they got tons and tons of positive reviews, except from the Chang, capturing the very essence of their signature sound.
I didn't even say anything.
I know. But you thought about it.
I didn't.
Also, now there is talk of a second round, a continuation from the 2016 reunion tour of Guns N' Roses. I don't know if it's true or not. If you guys know anything about this rumor going on that there may be a reunion tour, go ahead and let us know. Of course, in 2017, my favorite band in the world, U2, started a tour, and they're continuing to fill stadiums. And in 2023, there's a few bands I did want to mention. One of them being Whitesnake, because they did finish up their tour. No more. Bye-bye, Whitesnake. The Cure is worldwide right now going on tour. And Depeche Mode is filling stadiums. So, Chang, and I'm going to mention one more band, and I know you have a lot to say about this band. But finally, I guess, the farewell tour of Kiss.
You know, I went to go see a farewell tour of Kiss. I'd say maybe the Wait a minute.
In the 80s? When they took off their makeup?
No. 96, 97, the farewell tour. Me and my cousin Bobby, we went down and checked out that show. That was supposed to be the last hurrah for Kiss, all the original members. But yet Gene Simmons, the Donald Trump of heavy metal, who proclaimed he is the one that labelized the horns up, where as to Ronnie James Dio did it.
Wait a second. So anyway. Gene Simmons says that he started the horns and not Dio?
Yes, he said that. But he had his thumbs out. So when you do this, that means Hawaiian. Aloha, hello.
Wait, Malahu. Isn't that sign language? That means, I think that means hello, right?
For love.
Yeah.
Right. But Dio did the horns up with a thumb crossing over the middle finger, which is taken for a satanic gesture.
But it's not.
It really isn't. It's an old Catholic sign.
Actually, and I know, because in my side of the family, my dad's side of the family, they do. So I remember my grandparents, when somebody looked at them walking down the street in a wrong way or something, they would actually do the horns at them. And I would ask my grandfather in Italian, why are you doing the horns? He goes, because they give you the evil eye. So we're countering that, giving them these horns.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, okay. Either that or my grandfather was really deep into heavy metal. So in the 90s, they did a farewell tour?
Right. Yeah, they did a farewell tour in 96, 97. But then again, I saw The Who do that. I saw Guns N' Roses do that. And you mentioned Guns N' Roses coming out again. You mentioned The Cure. Metallica with a new album they have out right now.
That's right. They are on tour.
So on the charts. Bon Jovi with a new guitar player is out there. But Bon Jovi is kind of like a country John Cougar Mellencamp. But he still looks like Jamie Lee Curtis. Then, of course, you have The Crew. The Crew came out with Vince McMeil and Mick Mars exiting the band for whatever reason. You know, people are going to talk. Both sides are going to talk. We don't know the real story. I happen to think they jacked him around, but that's what I think. Also, you mentioned Depeche Mode. Did you know The Fix came out just to say goodbye in 2022? That maybe went under the radar. Now, here's the band for my children and cats and kitties that have kids. New Kids on the Block hooked up with NSYNC. Are you tripping on that?
So New Kids on the Block is 90s and 90s. NSYNC is 80s, yeah.
Yes. So that was a collaboration.
That's interesting.
Hit off pretty good. You got to give it up to those guys.
Now that I'm older, I actually get to appreciate many of the bands and the groups and even the boy bands that I did not and that I would just put them aside. But I do get to enjoy them. And it's funny because New Kids on the Block, I do understand that they're 90s, but they are currently on tour everywhere. And they're, you know, all the bands that were icons, and this is why we're doing this show on icons, regardless of, you know, how you may like them or may not like them. But the majority of the bands that we had in such high esteem are coming back and doing world tours, whether it be for final goodbyes, like supposedly Kiss is, and I would hope so, and others because they just want to continue.
Good riddance.
Yeah, others because they want to continue, and they still can, and others as a, well, you know what, we don't have much left, so we're going to continue. We have so many of those icons that are returning legends in the year 2023 more. So I couldn't be happier, man.
And let's not forget Bret Michaels without Poison. Let's not forget about Bruce Springsteen without the
E Street Band.
You know, the E Street Band, right?
Yeah.
There's so many acts that are coming out. Santana, he came out again, you know, but then again, he came back and he jammed with everybody under the sun, got his name known. It's incredible. They're talking about Journey is coming back. Now, I'm not sure if Steve Perry's going to join the band. I believe he is, but I believe they've been making music. And I think they did some gigs with Greg Raleigh, who is the original starter of the band with Neil Sean once they exited Santana's band. Music is always evolving. Kind of is like that washing machine dryer effect, brother. It tumbles within. It tumbles within. The cycle never ends. You know what I mean? Comes out a little bit cleaner, a little bit different. Now, so the '80s is definitely bringing back a lot of the old stars to school the new stars, because the new stars, they're lacking talent big time, bro.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so much in the school of musicality. The new generation has it all. They have the luxuries, they have the better machinery, the better devices, the better equipment. They may even have faster skills, but what they are lacking is a lot of the ingenuity, a lot of the creativity, a lot of the maturity, because it takes a mature artist, someone who's been there, someone who's struggled. Not just someone who's been on a stage and presented themselves before some judges to see if they've got the chops. Somebody who has paid their dues time after time, who has struggled and has suffered and has fought the good fight. So I am really, really happy that a lot of those icons are returning. These legends are returning to give us, in some cases, maybe their last show. And that's great. But on that, Chang, I want to ask you and I want to ask our 80s fans, do you agree or disagree that a lot of these bands should not be doing any farewell tours anymore, should not be doing any touring period, that they should just stay maybe writing books and doing some other things because they're either too old or just can't sing like they used to? I just want to stay with that memory as they once were.
You know what? I think a lot of people go see their favorite bands and artists out of nostalgia. You know, that music replicates to them a time in their lives where we were youthful. You know, we were invincible. We were vulnerable, but we were willing to be free and take chances and let those experiences speak for our own vices and our own personality. Now, here's where it gets crazy. So I think that's why people go see these bands. That's why some of these bands stick around, because nobody wants to come to terms with getting older. Mortality sets in. Believe me, brother, that's a whole different show. I think today's music lacks the emotional experience, vulnerability. When you write a song or a poem, it comes from your heart, your experience, your emotion, how you see it, how you ingest it. But it creates that unity where other people that have had similar experiences captify to the song because it explains their inner emotion. That's great music. I think today, with a lot of TV shows, the music industry would rather go to what do you look like? How hot are you? So that real creative genius, that real connection of music has been somewhat lost. Basically because I do blame MTV, but I blame paparazzi, camera, fake. That's what I blame. You give in to the idolism and not the content or the feeling of being an artist, connecting with people. You're not doing that for that reason. That's what the business lacks.
Well, from Chang's mouth to your ears, let's take a little break. And on this break, we're going to hear from the artists themselves regarding MTV a little bit. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the rise of the action heroes of the 80s in our decade today. So don't go away. You don't want to miss Back to the 80s Radio. We'll be right back.
Minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4,
1 small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
MTV has been heralded as fresh and innovative and criticized for being shallow.
When MTV first hit, this was the biggest talk in the universe.
MTV dropped a grenade into our world.
Everybody was watching MTV.
People had it on like the radio.
I want my MTV!
Made international stars almost overnight.
We had no idea what was going to happen because of MTV.
It gave a visual representation to the artist that they did not have before.
But you never looked at music the same way again.
Radio. That was Motley Crue with Live Wire, one of the bands that just moves Chang's spirit and soul to the very core. At least with that album anyway, because Don't Ask Him About Today.
Oh, yeah. That album. Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what, man? After Shout at the Devil, I think they weakened. And, you know, that's for another show, my input. I don't want to piss anybody off. I just think that band changed a bit after what Vince Neil did, and they capitalized on being immature. That's all I'll say.
All right.
That was a great album. That I remember seeing these cats at the US Festival, you know, but the sound was like really bad at the US Festival.
Right. They had a really hard time. Yeah.
And you could, you know what I mean? I mean, a lot, everybody there was effed up.
Well, you can blame
but
that
I guess
on
the technicians were effed up at also.
Yeah. You can blame that on all of Wozniak's team. Because they should have been better prepared for that. But anyway, that's for a different show. Just a reminder here, if you're just joining us, we are talking about icons of the 1980s, some of the biggest names in the history of Hollywood coming out in the 80s.
Oh,
and I'm talking
yeah.
about, I mean, action stars like Sylvester Stallone.
If I can change, and you can change, everybody can change.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
My name is Freeze. Learn it well.
Bruce Willis.
Come out to the coast. We'll get together. Have a few laughs.
But these are people that made a mark and a big footprint left in Hollywood. We had big names in action movies. And we had big action movies that didn't only include, Rambo and the Terminator.
Well, you remember it kicked off where we had Mr. T, you know, starring a Rocky movie. We had Dolph Lundgren. We had Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal. Chuck Norris was doing some movies, you know. In the
early 80s, yeah. We had Harrison Ford, who played Indiana Jones and made some of the greatest movies ever.
Wait a minute. Now, wait. Wow. Wow. Greatest movies.
No,
okay.
I'll
give you he's a great actor.
No. I said that starred in some of the greatest movies ever. Not the greatest. Just some of the greatest movies ever.
I'm okay.
See?
Sorry.
See how much work. The hater doesn't even listen.
What did I? I didn't say it. I said nothing.
Filth and hate.
You know what? You see, want to spew to the subconscious minds of the listeners. You want the listeners to pretend I said sarcastically Star Wars because you're inputting that in the hate.
I'm not.
I said nothing.
You know, Harrison Ford, his portrayal of Indiana Jones in all the series. Come on. And then today, these stars are returning. Now, whether it's going to be a good movie or not, hey, what are you going to do?
Harrison Ford, he was in 1923. One of the prelims to the great show that's ending in the fifth season, Yellowstone.
Yeah.
So you got to give him some props for that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. No, and I do.
Come on, don't.
I do. I always do. But look, some of those legends of the past are making their way back, and one of those huge legends is being
Stallone.
Sought after. Yeah, Sylvester Stallone. With so many movies and so many TV shows nowadays, even the younger audience knows who Sylvester Stallone is. Now, but let me mention this. Hollywood screwed up so bad, has screwed up so bad, with so many unsuccessful remakes of movies from the 80s. And one of those that they really, really, really did bad in are the Ghostbuster franchise.
I don't think they should be allowed to make remakes, reversions of classical movies in the past. I think it destroys it. It takes away the individual dominance of that movie. It cheapens it, any movie. And I thought that was a ridiculous portrayal of any kind of a movie ever. Those ladies are all hysterical in their own realm, but do not replicate a show that is. Next thing you know, they're going to want to redo Caddyshack with a bunch of pansy asses.
Well, believe it or not, they do want to redo Caddyshack, and they also want to redo a few other
films.
Son
of a monkey.
Let me mention a few films that Hollywood is thinking about remaking today. One is Caddyshack. Number two, The Goonies. This should be left alone. Number three, The Breakfast Club. Now, let me give you the reasons as to why they're going to redo this. Are you ready for this? Because only this generation would think of this. Because of diversity. They think that we need those films with a more diverse set of people in the movie. Those movies should be left alone. They were classics. They were great. leave them alone. Not everything in life is about diversity. And these writers in Hollywood, you either have writer's block, eternal writer's block, you shouldn't be in this business.
Or you have no talent.
Or you have completely no talent at all. You should not be thinking
exactly
about remakes. No. You should be using your talent, creativity, and whatever it is you think that today is better than it was before, use that to create something new and special and return Hollywood blockbusters to what they were back then and even before. So that's my two cents.
I agree with you 125%, my brother. I really do. Now, seeing that we're talking about actors, what about Tom Cruise, Mel Gibson? Mel Gibson has a couple of flicks he did come out in. It was Hacksaw House, killer-ass movie on the Netflix. Killer-ass movie. He also did Daddy's Home 2.
Yeah.
Hilarious. So, Mel Gibson, did you hate her, the drunk driver? You know.
So the funny thing about Mel Gibson on part two of one of the highest-grossing films in the history of movies, well, the first one was The Passion of the Christ, and he's also making the second one.
Uh-huh.
But yes, Mel Gibson, incredible actor, especially with his big films, Lethal Weapon. We all remember and love those films. Second, I mean, come on. Who else can portray these action films like the one and only Tom Cruise? Give me a break. This guy is a talent in every way. I mean, he may be a Scientologist, but I won't hold that against him. Tom Cruise is the freaking man.
Now, I will give you Tom Cruise as a great action actor. I will give you that. He's got guts and he's got balls and he is a great character actor. I will give him that. Personally, he's a jerk, but other than that, he's a great character actor. If you're going to talk about great actors, action actors, Schwarzenegger, great action actor.
Phenomenal.
Got some quirkiness, kind of funny. Shitty ass governor, but what are you going
to
do?
Well, he wasn't a bad governor to a lot of people. So let's leave that for another show as well. Yeah. There's two actors that I'm thinking of. One of them was action and comedy and romantic comedies. And another actor was doing romantic comedies, but he was also doing just comedy films. And both of these actors that I'm thinking, they are staples. They are icons of the 1980s. And unfortunately, because of illness today, they're leaving all of us 80s fans with deep sorrow, with a deep hole in our hearts. And I'm talking about Bruce Willis, and we all remember from the movie Die Hard.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
And also Michael J. Fox.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
And today, they had to retire because of what they're going through in their own personal life. So our hats off to them. Greatness. Icons of the 1980s.
I mean, anybody that has had to deal with a family member in similar situations has got to know the grief, the struggle, the sadness, the wonder, the questioning, testing your faith on why your loved one is going through that. What they brought to us and other fans is something that will always put a smile on our face. To anybody out there that has a family member going through that, our best to you, our best wishes, and our hats off to you, because it is a hard struggle. I've had to go through Parkinson's with my grandparents, and presently my mom is starting to show some of the signs. So my hats off to everybody out there.
Let's go ahead and take a break and listen to a couple of songs from two of the bands that are making their rounds now on tour, from Depeche Mode and Ghosts Again.
We'll be right back.
chill divine. A sort of silken moment that goes on forever. And we're leaving broken hearts behind. You mystify me, mystify. Need perfection, some twisted selection that tangles me to keep me alive in all that exists. When none has your beauty, I see your face, and I will survive.
Back to good, wholesome, politically correct entertainment. Oops, wrong station. Now,
back to the 80s with Toscano and Chang.
Hosted by Toscano and Chang. That was Ghost Again by Depeche Mode and Mystified by INXS. Tonight, we are going to be talking about icons from music, from movies, TV, whatever was an icon in the 80s. We're going to crash, bam, and Chang-a-bang it tonight. Toscano, what a great song for you to pick. I got to hand it to you for that song. I think that's food for thought for everybody out there to acknowledge, you know, that time does not stop for everybody because tomorrow is not promised. Great song.
Once again, they're legends. They're icons. And whether you like them or not, they're back today. They're filling stadiums. And these are bands that can still sing. They still have that essence of what made them so popular and what made them who they were in our hearts. So our hats off to all of them. And believe it or not, I'm about to say something, Chang, that you're not going to believe. I'm even tipping my hat on bands such as Rush, who can still rock the socks out of any band today. We're talking about the icons from the 1980s, ladies and gentlemen. I want to briefly skim over a subject, Chang, that, believe it or not, became icons in our life. What was that? Because we all partook in this. And I'm talking about the fashion, the iconic fashion of the 1980s that hit us in one way or another, whether it be in lust for the guys. Because remember the bikinis back then for women, the really high-cut bikinis? That drove us nuts. The leg warmers. Fitness in the 1980s was so hot, you got to admit.
Oh, I thought so. You talk about Madonna. You talk about Exposé.
I mean, look at artists like MC Hammer that brought along his flashy patterns and baggy style pants into the whole world of the teenagers and the older, you know. And then for the older generation back then, TV shows like Dynasty and Dallas, they spread a trend of, you know, those wide shoulder pads for the women and for the men, the double-breasted suits. You remember all that?
Oh, geez, Paula Abdul, Don Johnson, one of the sex lords back then. Who else did we have back then? Arsenio Hall was sexy. Eddie Murphy was considered sexy. David Bowie was sexy.
That's right. Ralph Macchio and Michael J. Fox with their acid-washed jeans, they became a staple even in the wardrobes for both men and women. And, I mean, it was edgy fashion for the time.
Yeah.
Remember when women started coming out with the ripped pants in the back? Their back pocket was ripped, and you can see like a quarter of the cheek. Remember how sexy that was?
Oh, yeah. Well, do you remember how sexy Ditto's was, you know, to your average male teenage year when Ditto's were getting sold like crazy?
Explain to those who don't know what Ditto's are. Explain to them what Ditto's are.
Anybody out there that does not remember the Ditto, oh, man, you young boys do not know what your mind will carry you away to without having the skin in your face. Ditto's was the greatest form-shaping pant, jean, whatever it was made out of, to any woman's body. I mean, it was a picture frame for the curve, for the booty, the contour. Ditto's was also so smooth to feel when you're in that neck of the woods where you're getting lucky and you're going to first base, but you're leading off.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Ditto's.
And a lot of Ditto's, brother, were from the 70s, right, brother?
Yes, they started in the late 70s. I think disco is what brought that type of a pant up.
Yes.
You know, the very sexy.
Now, I do want to remind you guys that if you guys want to get a good laugh and you guys want to take your mind off of things and you want to have theater of the mind, check out one of our shows. Go back to our archives and check out The Mechanics. These two gentlemen from back south somewhere, they take the time machine that both Chang and I sometimes take on our own, the good old Fiero time machine. And both of these gentlemen take the time machine back to the 80s, and they take an entire show describing what they saw, and Ditto's were one of those things that they saw. So just encouraging you guys to go ahead and check out the show called The Mechanics. One of the things that we cannot close our eyes to that was iconic, and it started in 1981, and the first song video that played on it was from the Buggles. Video Killed the Radio Star was MTV.
Oh, I stand by that song.
MTV.
I stand by it.
Regardless of what you feel.
I pledge allegiance to it.
Became iconic to us in the 1980s. Because you know what, brother? Regardless if they did kill the radio star, they also made the radio star a lot of money. Because there were people like me who had never seen these radio stars, what they look like. And we got to see them, and it was just phenomenal. I remember the first time I saw the video from Michael Jackson, Thriller, which captured the imagination, which captured the heart and minds of people around the world. It was a movie, and nobody had seen Michael Jackson other than in shows. And when we got to see this, the video Thriller, it changed the way we viewed artists. But then you got videos such as the one from Genesis called The Land of Confusion, which really made you feel like you were on mushrooms.
That's a powerful song.
It is a powerful song. So here we got the visuals to what the lyrics were, and it made an impact on our lives, me specifically. And that's why I loved MTV in the early part. Because look, brother, look at it. You can't look at it so much as what they did to the industry, which they did, unfortunately, but look at it as a youngster
right.
who had no idea what it was doing behind the scenes, but as a youngster who adored the singers, the performers of the early 80s, and now got to see them in action, to us, that meant everything.
I understand where you're coming from, and believe me, I'm not a true hater like you think. I remember when it came out.
I know that, brother.
You know what I mean? That was in the later 80s. I enjoyed watching it because I used to have a lot of keg and cocaine parties, and MTV was our form of entertainment. I used to like to watch a lot of the newer videos, but I do believe and stand strong that I think music went into catering to the camera and the look over the talent, the music, the creative genius, and the emotion of music as a power. But that's another thing. But
that's exactly what happened.
MTV.
You're right.
I think the very first jocks were knowledgeable. They were good eye candy. They were badass. They knew their stuff. They were legit. J.J. Jackson, Mark Goodman, Nina Blackwell. She knew what she was talking about. They all knew what they were talking about. You know what I mean? Martha Quinn.
Yep.
She was quirky, but I mean, she had it by the grip. You know, even in the later 80s into the 90s, MTV still had that essence in their hand in the music industry, and they were bringing it to be real. Unfortunately, a lot of mishaps that they had with drunken or overdosed guests kind of brought them to a demise. Everybody wanted to go a little bit more risque and realistic, so they stepped away from being music television. But I'll give them their props. I enjoyed it. Heck, I got loaded many a times and lucky with ladies at a lot of times when MTV was the only light in the room, if you catch my drift.
Coming up next, Sandy Kay from A Breath of Fresh Air interviewing a very special guest from Berlin. Don't go away.
Nobody has the movie I want.
Hey, if it's on video, Blockbuster probably has it. I mean, we have over 10,000 videos.
Wow.
I'll watch these fast and have them back tomorrow, I promise. Relax. At Blockbuster, you can keep your videos for 3 evenings, so take home plenty. And use our 24-hour quick drop.
Do you have any children's videos?
Sure. Blockbuster's America's family video store. You know, we have more kids' videos than any place else. Hey, more movies, more nights, more fun.
Blockbuster Video. Wow. What a difference.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Shadow Stevens, and you must listen to Back to the 80s Radio. It's the law.
Today is all about an American gal who really is a breath of fresh air. She's singer, songwriter, and actress Terry Nunn, who's best known for being one of the creators and the front person for the 80s band Berlin. The band was heavily influenced by the punk rock that was all around them in the late 70s, by bands like Ultravox and Kraftwerk. They're all about that edgy, emotive take on synth pop, although the song that they're best known for was anything but.
Hey, lovely to meet you.
Thank you so much.
What I find incredible, how few the number of women are in music. How's that felt for you?
Yeah, I understand it, you know, because it's a lot of traveling and having this kind of lifestyle. A lot of women don't want that. They want to be at home. They want to have kids. It's not conducive to that. So the balancing act of putting that together has been not so easy for me in this business, but I love traveling and I love music and it's still exciting to me.
I think whatever you do as a woman, it's constantly a juggling act if you want to have any sort of career, and your chosen profession where that does require all that traveling makes it particularly difficult, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I honestly bless COVID because I got back a relationship with my daughter. Now she just turned 18. And I just didn't have a relationship with her to speak of because I was never home. And COVID forced me to be home. I'm embarrassed to say, but she sat down one day and said, I don't see a future for myself, Mom. And I realized, oh, shit, she's depressed. And I didn't know it. So we worked through that. And she said she wanted help. And she got it. And she's happier and she's smiling again. And honestly, would that have happened without COVID? I hope so, but I can tell you it did happen because of COVID. A reconnection with my family.
The Metro from Berlin. The band couldn't get many radio stations to play that song, but they did have better luck with MTV when it started up in 1982, which put the video in rotation, thanks to the fact that lead singer Terry Nunn gave viewers a very attractive female to watch. MTV was still in its infancy, so record companies were stingy with budgets for the videos. Berlin shot the clips for both The Metro and Sex Eimer back-to-back over 2 days. Terry wasn't very happy about shooting the subway scene over and over. She was exhausted, became frustrated, and started to cry. Of course, it was this footage they used. Her anger and tears were exactly what the director had been looking for.
You weren't with them from the very start, but I love the story around how you did get to join the band. Can you share that with us?
I met John, I was 18. I wanted a band. I didn't want to be a solo artist. And actually, the singer who was in Berlin when I joined, she wanted to leave and be a solo artist, Toni Childs. She was up for a Grammy for one of her albums. She did very well. But she started out in Berlin. John Crawford started the band in 1977, and I joined in 1979. I auditioned. In those days, there was no internet. So he had an ad in a place. You had to go to this place and look through all these notebooks of ads for singers and bass players and guitarists and bands looking for this and singers looking for bands. And so I saw his ad and it said, "We do music that's unique. And I love unique." So I had to find out. So I contacted him and he sent me a tape and it was synthesizer music, which I had never heard before. And it wasn't happening in America yet. It was all overseas at that point.
Right.
So I was like, this is good. And the songs were good. You know, I was really excited by it. And so I lied through my teeth and said that I had all this experience that I didn't have. And so they auditioned me. And I got the job. So we just started playing clubs for 2-3 years. And finally, we got the attention of the record label of Geffen. And
the rest is history, as they say.
I shouldn't say that. We actually had something played on the radio that got the attention of the record labels because we started selling records that we were printing ourselves, and it really took off. We sold like 20,000 copies in a month. And so, of course, all the record labels who said that this synthesizer music is never going to go anywhere, all of a sudden they're knocking on the door saying, "Hey, we're interested in you." And so we finally got a deal. I'm a goddess. Well, I'm a virgin. I'm a blue movie. I'm a bitch. I'm a bitch. The beginning of Berlin was John and me and David. And we were the three who put it together and created the first album and our sound and, you know, what we were going to be. And then they were gone. And now they're back in the band again. So it's full circle.
So the music really was unique, wasn't it? At the time, there was, yes, as you said, no other synthesizer sounds happening.
And not in America, no.
And what had you been doing before you joined them?
I was like dabbling in music, playing in some local bands, trying it out in local places, but it was not serious. I wanted music so much, it scared me. I wanted to be a musician, and if I didn't make it as a musician, if I couldn't make a living at it, then I wanted to be a DJ. And I was. I did get that opportunity for 2 years. I was a DJ at an LA radio station here. I had my own show, and I got to play what I wanted. And I was doing television at the time. But then when they were creating the series Dallas, the casting director knew me, and I guess pitched me to the producers and they brought me in and I didn't even have to audition. They just said, okay. They said, you know, it's a 7-year contract. And I was 17 and I thought, okay, if this is a success, if it's a hit, then I'm stuck. I'm doing this TV show for 7 years. So this music thing is not going to happen for me. And I went home to my mom and I said, Mom, I know this is a great opportunity, but I really want to try this music thing. And I said, Mom, you know, what do you think? Should I turn it down? Should I try this music thing? And she said, you know, Terry, if you don't try it, you'll regret it. So you should try it. So I told my agent, and he dropped me instantly. He said, you know, are you out of your effing mind? This is a series. It's probably going to be a success. And how often does this come along? They're handing this to you. You know, are you an idiot? And he stopped representing me. So I had nothing. You know, I had nothing to lose. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a year and see if I can get something going in the music world. And it was a year later that I met John.
Terry also had a part in a movie.
Terrible movie called Thank God It's Friday. But the interesting thing about that one is that Thank God It's Friday was a movie, a disco movie made by a company who was showcasing two of its big artists, Donna Summer and the Commodores. Casablanca was making this movie. Uh-huh. And I was just an actor in it. But I just so happened to meet on the set Giorgio Moroder, who wrote and produced Donna Summer. I was in heaven. I mean, my God, it's Giorgio Moroder. And he's looking at me like, yeah, whatever. nice to meet you. Bye. And who would have thunk it that how many years later? It was probably 4 years later, 5 years later. We have an Oscar together and a number one hit around the world together. Who would have thunk it?
Dreams really do come true, don't they? Especially in Los Angeles.
They do. And music dreams do come true in Los Angeles because it's one of the top four capitals of music in the world. Los Angeles, Nashville, London, and New York are the top music capitals of the world.
Really? Melbourne holds the distinction as the live music capital of the world.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, we'll be in Melbourne. We are playing in Melbourne.
You are indeed. Berlin actually grew out of the rock band called The Toys. And what do you know about why it changed its name to Berlin? It's a strange name to have chosen at the time, don't you think?
John Crawford is German, and he also started The Toys. And he was fascinated with how Berlin was, especially pre-war Germany, was this bastion of culture and art and incredible progress surrounded by communism. And for him as a teenager, it felt like how he was with all of these restrictions that he had from his parents and from school. And, you know, everybody wants you to be this normal person and you want to create and you want to make music and art and do something great in the world. So I think he found that to be an interesting idea as a name.
Today we're talking with Berlin's Terry Nunn, and she spent ages hopping from acting to singing and back to acting again until the group managed to get their biggest break.
It definitely took off. It took a while, but it did take off. They just kept pushing on the song and they kept trying, and then it just slowly caught fire and went insane. It is the gift that keeps on giving in my life, because I can't believe that even now people are still affected by that song.
But there was a lot of dissension in the group, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, but Take My Breath Away wasn't the cause of it. It was another reason to have dissension.
Go on.
To be honest. Honestly, I mean, at that point, Sandy, we had been playing and touring and writing so long, and we didn't know how to get off the hamster wheel of that and get a life. And nobody was really in our corner saying, yeah, you need a break.
Right.
I honestly feel if we had done that, we would have stayed together. But because we didn't, we were just going and going and going, we turned on each other. And then Take My Breath Away came along, and it was a song outside of Berlin's writing. And another reason for us to disagree. I thought it was great to do a Giorgio Moroder song. We wanted to work with him so much that we begged him to just do anything.
Really?
We just thought what he had done with Bowie, you know, putting out Fire with Gasoline and Donna Summer and Blondie and Cat People and Flashdance. And I mean, the guy was just electronically doing everything we wanted to do. And it's all timing. While he was producing No More Words, he got Top Gun. He got the job to do the soundtrack for that movie, which was coming out the following year. So we were there. John didn't want to do the song. Giorgio Moroder could have farted and I would have sung it. I loved that guy so much. And so when he came in and said he wrote a song and would you like to sing it, I didn't even need to hear it. I was like, yeah, give it to me. I'll do it. I'll sing it to you tomorrow. And John's like, no, that's not our music. We're not doing that. We need to be Berlin. This is not Berlin. This is Giorgio Moroder. I said, I don't care. I want to do it. So, and the label's like, do it, do it, do it. You know, it's a big movie. And so they're all over it. So they shut John down and we did it. We had not had a hit at all at that point. We were underground hit people, but nothing that the world knew or no chart positions whatsoever at that point. So he tried out a bunch of other people for that, and because they were bigger and they had had hits, and that's what Paramount wanted. They wanted a big singer to sing their big love song for this movie. So they didn't like anybody. They didn't like any of the singers. So because we were there, I got the chance to audition and do the job.
So at the absolute peak of your success, when that song was number one internationally, it received both the Golden Globe and the Academy Award for Best Original Song in 1986.
It was both the blessing and the curse of the band because it was our first number one. It was our first international number one. And so we got to play everywhere for the first time. You know, success heightens everything. Everything in a personality will get more with success. So everything that was bad, way worse, because now we're working even more than before. So we have even less of a life if we had any before. Now the label's like, oh, you're gonna play everywhere. It was like, there's no time for anything but this. The money was bigger, but so was the work. And we're tired and we don't know what to do about it. And we don't know how to talk to each other. And that got worse. So by the end of that tour, we weren't even speaking. John and I weren't even talking anymore. We just couldn't figure out anything that we agreed on. We should have just taken a year off and come back to it. That was the nails in the coffin.
I just want to know, finally, you talk about chemistry between writers. How did it come about that you and the other guys started writing new material again in 2016?
I think it's just because it's what we do. You know, when he was getting a divorce, John was divorcing this woman. Right. After all these years, he came to me because I'd been through one divorce and we helped each other. I helped him through that. And David Diamond was also going through a breakup. And so we just kind of hugged each other through that. Yeah. And it just, that's
developed, redeveloped.
It's our language, you know, talking about music, playing things we like, making music together. And it took a while.
And the latest stuff, how does that compare to the earlier stuff?
It still sounds like Berlin, but it's using a lot of the toolbox, the toy box that we have now, which we didn't have then. The electronics are really fun to me. They're really inspiring to me. We did an album that also came out right when COVID hit, which was Berlin playing our hits with an orchestra.
Attached was released in 2020. I have to let you go. I don't want to let you go. Terrific chatting with you.
Thank you for having me. Take care, Sandy.
Talk soon, Terry. Bye.
All right. Bye.
She's a pretty special lady, isn't she? And like so many of us, she's had to undergo all the highs and lows that life throws at you in order to finally strike a balance. Thanks so much for keeping me company today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode.
Welcome, mateys fans. I have been expecting you. You no longer need to listen to any other podcast. You want the 80s, don't you? The longing for it is swelling in you now. Feel the memories coming to you and listen to Back to the 80s. Give in to nostalgia. With each passing moment, you make yourself more of an 80s fan. It is unavoidable. It is your destiny.
You don't know the power of Back to the 80s.
You, like your childhood, are now mine.
All right, so we continue the show here on Back to the 80s Radio as we are talking about lots of the iconic figures and things that we had back in the 1980s. Let me ask you something, brother, and everybody out there listening. If you want to receive a special prize this week, as Mr. Carr received this week, a special CD for naming the album that we should talk about in the 80s Greatest Albums, we want to give you a special gift. So, here is the trivia question for this evening. Who played Marty McFly in the Back to the Future trilogy? Only the correct answer that reaches out to us on our email. You can't reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. You got to reach out to us on our email. But the first person or people that reach out to us on our email. Our email is back2the80sradio@gmail.com. So if you answer the question, who played Marty McFly in the Back to the 80s Future trilogy, you will get a special prize from us here at Back to the 80s Radio. You know, as we come to the end of our show, do you have a special memory from the 1980s? Something that you say, you know what? I have a lot of memories of the 80s, but this is one of them that I love to replay in my mind. Do you have something like that? And if you do,
man, I think,
what is that?
You know what, bro? Yeah, there's one thing, and that was the birth of my daughter in 1987 of January, Jasmine Chastity. I won't give you the last name. She's a Chang. That is probably the greatest memory, greatest experience, greatest feeling, greatest jubilation that I've ever had in that era of the 80s, because I do have other children. But yeah, definitely 1987, the birth of my child was the greatest memory I have of the 80s. Every time I hear Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine, it reminds me of my child. And that time, I'll tell you, like Cats in the, there's certain songs that a lot of us can't sit through. I cannot sit through Cats in the Cradle since my dad passed. But Sweet Child of Mine, it's a rocking song, but it'll get me choked up where I can't continue singing. It just reminds me of that time. Crazy. Rock and roll, bro. It's always an emotion. It's always something that you can unify with somebody else with. Incredible power.
It is powerful. And one of those memories that comes to my mind was, I believe it was October, Thursday, in October 1987, when the earthquake in Whittier hit. I was going to high school with my best friend Mark, and we were,
I remember.
We were already on campus, and we see the windows start to shake, and everybody starts running out onto the field at Santa Fe Springs High School. And we took the occasion, because that's what we did back then, and we ditched school because we were, first of all, we were a little scared, no matter how tough we acted. But secondly, we went out with a bunch of our friends, and we went to the nearest park, and we waited on the bench. In spite of tragic situations or tragic circumstances, we took our bikes, and we rode by the Whittier Mall. And a lot of the stores were brought down, and they were in rubble because of the earthquake. But my best friend and myself, we were there.
Right, I remember that.
And you know what's funny, Chang? You and I were not far away from each other back then. In some way,
don't.
I think that our spirits knew that. Here, back to the 80s, we just want you to know that if you lived through the 80s, we have a lot in common. A lot of bad things happened, but most of it was good. And those good things will last forever. So, on behalf of Toscano and Chang, I want to wish you a great week. I want to say thank you for joining us. And if you have anything to let us know, go ahead and write to us and drop us a line. And so, to that, we say, till next week.
Chang here. Before we release you to another Changtastic weekend, remember to always remember you count, no matter who you are, what you believe in, where you come from, what you love, what you don't like. You matter. Always put a smile on that face, because tomorrow is not promised. If you can't stand for something, stand for yourself and stand for something greater than you. Till we meet again, I bid you all a adios, arrivederci, hasta mañana, hasta la vista, hasta luego, sayonara, arrivederci, and to all the cats and kitties in SoCal, later bros and does, and to all the homies and everybody in or out of an institution, the struggle is real. Orale.
doing?